This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the One Was Had a Dream podcast. My name is Lee Finch. If you are tuning in expecting to hear from the wizard Rob Ursel, unfortunately he had something else on tonight, short notice, so he had to postpone. So we are disappointed. We are going to speak to him and hopefully get him on at one point. But yeah, you ain't going to be hearing from the wizard, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately, it depends on how you look at it. You are going to be stuck with myself and Danny Baker. Danny, how are we? You all right?
I'm good. What would be your, if he's the wizard, what are you going to be?
Well, my nickname's Chips.
Okay. Well, go on. What's the background? Why are you Chips?
Because my mates, and it was Mark Buzzwell who come up with it. You know Buzz. I think you know.
Oh, well, I know. We had a great chat, Buzz, on the pod last year.
He loves it, didn't he? He said I look like Mr. Chips from Catchphrase. You know, I'm bald.
When I didn't have that's a beard. Excellent. Yeah, you look like Mr. Chips from a Catchphrase.
Yeah, and then we went out one day and they
me and my missus love Catchphrase. Watch it every night.
And they call me Mr. Chips. You know the noise?
I know.
Played that, I had to dance when we went out for a night out once. But yeah, it just stuck. It was Chips. And people, because I'm quite fat, everyone used to think it's because I like eating chips. But it's not. It's Mr. Chips from Catchphrase. And I don't call him Mark, which is his real name. I just call him Buzz. My mate Justin, he's called U-Boat.
I know U-Boat, yeah.
Yeah, he shat himself at Reading away and hid under the table. We said he sank as quickly as a U-Boat.
And that's it.
His nickname at the time was The General. So he's gone from The General to you. And he was like, no, I'm the General. And everyone's called him you. No one, even his mum and dad don't even call him Justin anymore. They call him you.
Oh, I was actually going to talk about something different. But do you know what? Now we're on it. I love nicknames. I love fans. We had a kid in our school, right? And we were in the first day and we were sitting there. And we're just all sitting around a table. And anyone who went to my old school, Wallington, we'll notice there's a lad called James Theobald, right? And he's a lovely lad. So everyone's going around and someone went, what's your name? And just randomly someone went, he went, James Theobald. And the guy went, Sybil, as if like, what the hell? If you say James Theobald really quickly, he says that sounds like Sybil. He's been called Sybil by everyone ever since because one guy misheard it. Oh, mate, funny.
It's mad though, isn't it? Like, literally, no one calls me Lee. I've never been called Lee. It's always been Chigwell when I first started going Wimbledon. People were like, where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Chigwell. Weren't really. I'm from Hainault, which is the shit part. Chigwell's the posh part, so you always said Chigwell. And everyone just calls me Chips, Chippo, Chipsy. And it's just Chips now.
What are the best nicknames that you can like think of? Like, I used to love Sybil. We had a mate at school called Grandad because he always used to eat Werther's Originals. So do you remember that at the time they had an advert where they had the granddad giving out the sweets? That was quite funny.
Of our mates is called Rock and Roll because he has Liam Gallagher haircut. So it's Rock and Roll Dave because
Rock and Roll Dave.
U-Boat's the best one ever because he was
tired, really good.
Never going to stick because it literally We called his sister U-Boat Sister. We don't even call her a name. It's U-Boat Sister.
Oh,
one of my mates. Do you know my mate Gary Saxby?
Yeah, I know. I know the names and I've seen people a bit.
We call him Crime.
Okay.
Crime doesn't pay, and neither does Gary.
Oh, no.
So, things like that. Gary's never. You've never seen his wallet. There's loads of them. Matty,
a mate of mine, we call Mitchum. Because he's basically from Mitcham, but he's my mate Nick Jones. He's a fantastic bloke. But everyone just calls him Mitch.
We're the only country Mitcham. That does it, though, isn't it, really, I think?
I just think it's epic, and some of them are just so ridiculous. Like, what is even that? It could be like, and you can mishear it, or you just light a sweet, and you just get called, I don't know, Toblerone for the rest of your life. It's fantastic.
What I love is when you're away, like, we've been on stags and stuff, and U-Boat has to tell the reason why it's called U-Boat.
Oh, I must be stunning. And it gets watered down, does it?
Well, he tries to water down, but then everyone who's been obviously embellishes it a little bit more. Do you know what I mean? So he was crying under a table. A load of Leeds fans or Reading fans wanted to beat him up, so he sank like a U-boat. Yeah, it's just mad. I think, you know, when Chicharito, was it Hernandez?
Yeah.
That was his nickname on his little shirt. I think they should do that for like Stevie G should be Slippy G on his shirt or something. You know, the nickname that he's been given. Do you know what I mean? They should all have their nicknames on them.
Davison will be Davison, obviously.
Well, it's spelt the same, so it's not going to change.
Was it Young Coombs will be Taylor Wannabe? All that
NYC,
sort of stuff.
NYC on the back stuff.
Pierce will be Uncle Albert. Yeah.
But it is mad how nicknames literally just stick with people for the whole of their life.
And it literally does. And it goes on, and you're like, what on earth is going on? Like, literally, at school, I'm obviously quite energetic and stuff, and I'm always, you know, mucking about with the kids, having a good time. And one of the kids in front of, honestly, about 50 of the staff. I don't know who it was. And someone went, Mr. Baker, do you know that you remind me of somebody? And I was like, oh, yeah, what's that? And he went, Mr. Poppy from Nativity. Have you seen Nativity, the film? He's like he's the teaching assistant who goes around going mental.
Yeah, he's quite
literally. Everyone's like, from that, like literally now, in my room, it's like, there he is, Poppy. It's like, oh, no.
You know what I don't like, though? Lazy nicknames.
Yeah.
So, like, Ben Stokes would be like Stokesy.
Stokesy. Do you know what? I'm with you. Anything shortened or you add a Y on the end, come on, be better than that.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's so many. But it's just matter. Like, when we got married, we didn't have a cake. But if we had a cake, I was going to put a little figurine of chips.
Have a catchphrase you've got to solve on the top. Yeah.
It was me. And then the wife was going to be like a normal, like, woman one, you know, a little mannequin on the cake. But yeah, I've been called Chips. Yeah, that's why if you look at my Twitter, it's Chips at Chips Finch. If anyone wants
absolutely
to follow me.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Anyone's got any other amazing. There's an Aussie radio station who do like loads of like talking in, and they do like
I've
a talk
it.
Show. And
yeah.
And the bloke kind of posts and they all talk about the different nicknames. Anyone got any wicked nicknames? Share them. I'd love to buy a pint for someone who shares me the best.
He's laughing his head off, isn't he? Like,
oh, mate. What was it? What was called that? Sniper's Nightmare or something like that. His legs, his feet are moving from side to side.
The problem
is
the reasons why they got them.
Yeah, oh, it's so good.
And none of them are true. You know what I mean? It's all men just embellishing it a little bit further.
Of course, but it's just funny. It's like I said, it could be on a night out, just sitting at a bus stop or doing something, and someone says it, and another person catches on, and all of a sudden it's gone through like 1,000 people.
You know what done it for me was, remember the Inbetweeners film when they go away?
Yeah, yeah.
And you get the T-shirts.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
You see bloke going on the stag do with their nicknames on, you know what I mean?
One of the lads of the rugby team when I was younger at school, he thought I looked like, you know, the bloke, it's a puppet, Brian Connolly.
Yes.
So he used to call me Dangerous Brian. Do you remember, like, he had the bloke, like, Dangerous Brian was one of the characters? So I was literally, for like a year, everyone was like, oh, there he is, Dangerous Brian. I was like, what are you calling me Dangerous Brian for? It was chaos. Absolutely chaos.
Brilliant. And when the stag do ones, you always got one geezer with like Big Dick Steve or something.
Yeah, it's like,
mate, that's an awful nickname. Come on. Like, you're giving yourself that. I mean,
Steve.
But yeah, anyway.
I can't think of many good. I can't unfortunately come up with any good nicknames for some of the guys on Saturday because crikey, that was a watch and a half, wasn't it? The Stockport game.
It was horrendous. I previously spoke to you about this. I had a train ticket to go out there with me and my boy. Decided to work and earn some money instead, and probably one of the greatest decisions. I was fuming, and this is another thing. My missus thinks this is really weird. But do you do this, Danny? When you're watching football, do you talk to the footballers? Do you
no?
When you're watching at home, you don't go, oh, that's awful ref, or what were you doing, Palmer?
It's a weird one, and it's actually a really good question, because we were talking a little bit about this today, but I find it, I don't often, if I'm watching the game, like, behave as if I'm in the game. For me, it's a different experience. I'm still like, oh, come on, or whatever, I'll be like, or I'll be next to my dad and be like, oh, that's a foul, that's a yellow, That's a bit dodgy. I don't often. I'm not as like rah. I find I've got to be there to feel the energy to be like that.
I have to get like that to be the energy, or I'm just sitting there on my phone bored. And it was the
Stockport thing. The reason why, and I wasn't like the one thing I was actually quite concerned, because it was the first time I felt like we had a. I mean, the Mansfield game, we had that like 20 minute spell and the dodgy red, and we'll never really know. And we were never in it, but 2-2 losing a player was never good. But yesterday, on Saturday, we were so poor. It was like last year. And it was like, oh my God, we're not going to have this again. And the thing that was well is because we had, it's almost like a mirror of last year, didn't we? We had that really good start and we were like, oh, well, this is amazing. And then I remember pretty early, I can't remember exactly what day, but I'm pretty sure we went away. Dapper Mabule scored away at Shrewsbury and we won one. We lost in the end 2-1. And everyone was going, oh my God, this was terrible. And we started slowly dropping down. Massive red flags from Saturday. Well, I can't remember anybody playing particularly well. A couple of them I thought were absolutely embarrassing, to be honest.
All of them were horrendous.
I mean, I don't know about you. I haven't been a big fan of Lee Brown since he's been in, but I thought he was terrible, absolutely terrible on Saturday. And I thought Osu was terrible.
Oh, mate, the problem I got with last week, and we've mentioned it, you mentioned it last year when we were going through it, is you can take a 1-0 loss to a Stockport because you know Stockport are a decent side, right? They've got Watton up front. I forget his name, begins with a C, the big blonde geezer that played just behind him. The geezer was massive. They were units all at Stockport. And you think it's a tough place to go. Their league position's probably not right. They're going to be up there.
They've got some decent players. Sarcevic is decent. I know Madden weren't playing, but they've spent a few bob. They'll be all right.
And they've lost a few games. So they at home, they need to start winning, right? But the manner of the defeat was the thing that I think got me. And then when we'd done the Sunday debrief and everyone was literally, as you said, it was mirroring everything that happened the last 32 games of last year and a couple of this year, is that we just looked horrendous. There was no fight. There was no passion. You mentioned Lee Brown. Apparently Lee Brown was getting a little bit of stick from, because Stockport's really close to pitch. You can hear what fans are saying.
And well, our fans or Stockport fans?
No, our
fans.
Terrible. When he left the pitch, you could kind of see he wasn't clapping. He wasn't interested in that. He was literally head down off. And the problem that got with him is like, problem I got is it's so negative football at the moment. Like we play, you know, we said a Crawley. We're like, we won 2-0. People got to be happy. We won 2-0. Looked easy, but people were bored and booing and kind of. And then maybe they were right in the reasons why. Because you look at the game against Stockport. Why is he starting NYC on the bench?
I mean, if I'm really honest with you, Lee, one of the things, and we're talking for the guys who don't know, me and Lee will kind of chat in a week and have a few ideas about stuff. And honestly, I feel like it's square pegs in round holes. I was looking at it and I was like, Alex Pearce, are you genuinely good enough to play as a ball playing centre back in the middle? Probably not. Lee Brown, are you actually good enough both defensively and with the ball at feet to play in that position? Probably not. Maybe Gunter, can you get up and down? Yeah, 100%. And I looked across that whole pitch and I was like, Chislett, are you good enough to play in the middle of this park? Probably not quite. And I was just looking around at all these different players thinking, well, that's how you shouldn't be up front. Osu, you look well out of nick. Gunter, you haven't got the legs to play as a wing back. I was looking at the three defenders and I was like, Pierce, are you good enough to be the middle person to make these passes? And I was just looking at it and I felt that the formation didn't suit the players. The positions that the players in didn't suit the players. And it just looked like, almost like you said, that first game, I'm going to try this out. And it just didn't look at all like the players were suited for those players.
I mentioned it to one of my mates and said, why is it every manager we have in comes in with their own formation that they're stubborn on, right? This 3-5-2, but then don't bring players in to play that formation. Because I don't think Millwall played it with Pearce. Lee Brown didn't play it. We played it last year.
He played four at the back of Portsmouth.
Yep, four at the back of Portsmouth. Gunter, I don't know what. Charlton, he played 3-5-2 but he weren't playing in a 3-5-2.
No, and he didn't get much game time either.
No, at Charlton. And you're bringing players in to play a system that they don't like or don't play in or have never played in, thinking you're going to find. And we said this again on the Sunday debrief, is that you go, oh, what are we doing? Come on, Robbo, change. Oh, no, it's not Robbo. It's Glyn Hodges. No, it ain't Glyn Hodges. It's Tony. They're exactly the same. All three of them exactly the same as we've done previous years.
I mean, to be honest with you, one of the big concerns, and I think Crawley are having it, and I think it's a real weird, and it's almost like a modern young manager who has played youth football, where everyone's a bit dynamic and they're all being almost taught to play football in inverted commas, and it will drive everyone mad the proper way, get the ball down and play. Alex Pearce ain't that player. He wants to get hold of a striker. He wants a big, tall guy wrestling. Same with Tony Craig when he played at Crawley. He could not pass the ball for Toffee. He was nowhere near good enough, quick enough, good enough positioning. Tony Craig wants a war. He wants to get up there, some blow, elbows kicking and all sorts, yeah. And he wants to be in a war. So does Alex Pearce. And unfortunately, we just don't. It's a concern that we've at the moment, just the kind of players that we've got don't necessarily, in my opinion, have suited the way that we've kind of played. And Asau cannot play up front. No. He's got to be wide, or he's got to be move
too
everywhere.
Too far apart. They're miles apart from each other, Josh Douglas. And he don't give the ball. So he's better in the hole. Yeah. Chislett, as good as he was at Crawley, is Stockport away against massive players. You know he's not going to be as good. So play Asau, who is going to get roughed up. He likes that kind of game. And play NYC and Davison. And another point that we said on the Sunday debrief is, did you look at our bench? Right, and it ain't the players on the bench and how old they are. It's we had three centre backs on the bench, or three defenders. So we had the new
Ogundiri, Callum Bailly.
Ogundiri, he's a centre back / wing back. We had Callum Bailly, we had the new kid, right? Three centre backs. We then had Alfie Bendall and Kwaku Frimpong, who I would have as defensive midfielders.
I agree.
So two defensive midfielders as well. So that's fine. Then we had a youth goalkeeper because
who actually didn't make the bench in the end, did he?
The youth goalkeeper did, yeah.
Yeah, but he was meant to be on the bench, and then when they released it, he was taken off it.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, so he had six subs, yeah.
And then NYC. So we said, if you go 1-0 down in that game, how are you changing it about to get us back into it? Do you know what I mean? You've only got NYC to come on. If something goes wrong, we've got no one on that bench. We end up putting Paul Kalambay up front for the last 10 minutes of the game. It's just like, boom, my mind was blown, mate, with that.
Well, again, I don't know where Quain Bartley was. I don't know if he was not selected or injured. I mean, I don't know. But I think it does flag a bit of a concern about, you know, obviously the window. And I felt that as a fan base, there were at least three players that we probably were looking at getting in the last day. And I know we're going to touch a fraction on the Don's Trust chat. So I don't want to interfere too much with that unless you want to flow into it. Yeah, I mean, it does show you that we, as a squad, we're relatively small. If you, like I said, you think Woodyard wasn't available, Magoma wasn't available, Hudlin wasn't available. Obviously, a backup keeper wasn't available. We're kind of a smallish group that if our best 11's on the pitch, we'll be okay. We're not going to be brilliant, but we'll be decent. But yep. We're kind of plan A or plan A. It just feels like the communication that we were given about we're going to be competitive and we're going to try and be in the playoffs, unless we get really lucky or we stay injury free or we play teams at the right times, I don't see how anybody can look at our group as a group, take away formations, but look at our squad compared to everyone else and think we're anything but mid-table. And that's okay, but just communicate that. Don't say we're going to be anything that we're not.
I have to agree with that. That's what we said as well. We said that you have to, the expectations have been ramped up this year by what the comms have been put out by the management.
100%, and it's ridiculous.
And we now everyone's looking at our first team and thinking, yeah, that's a decent first team. We have got a good first team, other than the centre-backs, but that can be changed. Hudlin, is he back? Because apparently he was meant to be back on Monday.
From what I understand, is that he should be back now.
But
whether he is, I don't know.
I've not watched anything that's been put out by it because I've been quite busy with work and stuff. So I don't know if this video's gone out and he's back, but I don't believe he. No one's seen him yet.
Do you know what? I actually feel a little bit for Johnny Jackson, you know, because I don't know where you sit with the first sort of seven or eight games. And obviously Wimbledon are very, very good at giving managers time and he will deserve some time. But I feel like the fans have gone into this season with an expectation of us being at the higher end of the table. We've got a relatively young, inexperienced manager who's probably not quite been given the amount of money that we think he's been given. So already he's a little bit behind the eight ball. He then gets rid of our best player and he probably takes Hudlin as a kicker. I doubt very much Hudlin's in his top five strikers, but he goes, oh, actually, he'll be all right. So we'll take him.
Yeah.
His main man, Woodyard, who he's kind of tried to back, has basically been injured and he hasn't even been around in the games. And I think above all, I can't imagine that he was looking at the last week of the window and he thought he'd sign a player at 11:30 or 10:30 when it's 11 o'clock and it's a backup centre-back. I would be very surprised if he got exactly what he wanted. But so it'll be interesting to see where people see Jackson, where he is. But the worry, obviously, is he seems like a Robbo Mark too, in terms of very honest about the conversations about what we're not doing, what we are doing. But we need some change up, and that's not his fault. That's just kind of where we're at the minute.
Josh Davison is a record buyer as well. So Josh
is he Davison, really?
That's what is on that Don's Trust report that was put out today. But yeah, Josh Davison has come in as our record signing.
So go on, while you've touched on it, shall we move on to that or elaborate on that a bit?
Well, yeah, we'll have our break, and then when we come back, we'll move on to the Don's Trust board statement that was put out, and then we'll speak about that.
The Wombles Had a Dream podcast, by the fans, for the fans.
Welcome back, and we're going to be discussing the Don's Trust board statement that went out regarding our budget for this season. Previously, as we just discussed regarding the Stockport game and stuff and the competitive budget, Dan, do you feel like you've been not lied to as such, but maybe expectations could have been calmed down a little bit from the Don's Trust board by telling us this information earlier? Because it's one thing I've got to say, sorry, I asked you the question, but one thing I've got to say is I'm quite glad they've been transparent now with us and letting us know this information. But people I've spoke to are really, really quite annoyed by it.
I think there's two schools of thought. The school of thought that I don't think it is, but it's quite a naughty one, is the fact of they've waited until they've taken everyone's money for their season tickets, built up all the expectation of look how good we're going to be. We could be really good. We're looking for promotion, blah, 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 blah. Let's get the dosh in. Now you've taken everyone's money in and, you know, you've seen that we're doing okay. Oh, by the way, you know, we're going to do this. Actually, this isn't going to happen. So I don't think that's the case. I'm not sure. I'd like to think our board wouldn't behave like that, but I guess the challenge obviously is I don't know. I mean, to be blunt, and again it'll be interesting, I don't have a clue about the cost, the cost of living crisis and how it's impacting football clubs and businesses. We're in a particular business where we are seriously struggling for money, but I don't think it's been particularly fair, and I don't think the sums that quite add up. And I think if you're going to tell the fans we're expecting this, it's abundantly clear that we're not going to now have a competitive budget, which is, in my opinion, again, we spoke about it before, competitive for what? Competitive to stay in the league, competitive to go up, competitive not to. And the recent comm said that we were aiming for a competitive budget to be in the middle 7th to 12th, well, apart from one position, they're all not in the playoffs. So it's kind of, I think, I personally don't think many of the fans would be too negative as long as you told them the truth to begin with, and they could at least then make their own decision or they'll buy into it. Telling people and fans that we're aiming for this creates a lot of pressure on a young side. Now, what it means is we're thinking, well, why are we not doing this? You put the manager under pressure, and now everyone's like, oh, okay, we're now not thinking of being in the top 7 or 12 when we're actually looking at being a mid-table side. So I think I'm okay with it, but I desperately wish they spoke about this earlier.
Yeah, because most fans you speak to, and most fans like your mates and stuff, most of us predicted mid-table, we'd be happy with mid-table.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? At the start of the season. And now when you get your expectations risen and you're hearing stuff from the club and from Johnny Jackson that we need to go up straight away, it's like we have to find a £900,000 shortfall. £500,000 of that was getting relegated.
Yep.
What's the mistake then last year of relegation was that people are saying the sale of Ollie Palmer and not reinvesting it properly. But everyone was happy when Ollie Palmer was sold for 300K, considering he chose when to play. He was injury prone. Didn't really do that much for us. I know he's scoring at Wrexham, but then, do you know what I mean? You expect a player of his quality to drop down to the conference and score goals.
Yep.
Or is it the fact that we waited for so long before getting rid of Mark Robinson and maybe having a go up, staying up, that in the end we just sleptwalked straight into a relegation that has now cost us £500,000. And the fact that we're now looking at our attendances, as I said earlier, And I said this, we had a Twitter space yesterday regarding this. Why have we gone after Johnny Jackson as our manager? We've gone after him, knowing how defensive he plays, knowing his style of football, knowing everything that we did last year and what happened last year. How is that going to get people on side?
I don't think it does. And I think, unfortunately, it's a catalogue of errors, and it's really ridiculous. You know, we're talking about potentially 4 or 5 months ago, when we're in one of the worst runs in British football, that they're coming out and saying our aim is to be in the Championship within 5 years.
Yeah,
I mean, come on, seriously. Never mind, we're just going to try and work out, pay the stadium off. I genuinely believe this. If the club went, do you know what, guys? We've just bought this new stadium. It's fantastic. We just need to pay it off. And what we're going to do is we're going to focus on getting players in, turning them around. We want to give you all a competitive squad, but we know the moment that budget's gone in terms of the paying off the student loan, crikey, it's been a while, getting rid of the stadium, then all of a sudden things can kick on. But £900,000 in additional income just to keep our playing budget at the same level as we had last season in League One. Their forecasting is terrible. Because they've mentioned about at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, we're going to have the best budget. I mean, come on, that's 900,000. That is a huge amount of money. It's just, I think it's really naive.
What scares me the most is that we're saying, like, we've got to sell players. We've got a couple of commodities at the moment which we can sell. That's Al and Jack Curry, possibly, if he gets on. Look, beyond that, I'm looking at players and thinking, where are these players coming from that we're going to sell? Jack Redoni took, what, 10 years to be able to sell him? We haven't got 10 years now. Asau, again, another one that came for our youth that took 10 years. Okay, we've made some money from kids that we've sold to Rangers this season, and we've sold one to Wolves and goalkeepers previously. But that's peanuts on the size of the money we need. We need to be selling a Jack Redoni now pretty much every season to be not that won't even break us even, 800 grand. Do you know what I mean? And it's like we're expecting to make 900 grand off player sales and maybe a good cup run, right? We've had, what, two good cup runs, since we started, Liverpool and West Ham. Do you know what I mean? And both of them, and last year we had a good cup run against Arsenal. We didn't make a lot of money out of that Arsenal game. So I don't get, their forecasting just don't seem great. I like the transparency, and we've been saying we need these kind of figures. But this is, as you said, this has got to come out at the start of the season, because people have gone out and bought their season tickets and stuff like that. And most fans will keep going. But it's just, when does it... We're 15th in the league. We're 17th in the form table at the moment. I know it's early days. But what happens when people just go, no, I'm not going in December because it's pouring down with rain, it's snowing?
I'm not going to Stockport because I don't want to do it because of all of the stuff that's involved with it. The thing that's a bit weird is, again, if you explain these conversations about money and stuff, the whole of the last week of the transfer window, everyone was buzzing and excited about, we could get this bloke, we can get that bloke, we were looking at, realistically, a right back, we were looking at a potential forward, we were looking at a potential striker, and we've ended up with a backup centre back. I mean, he's going to be on a relatively small amount of money. And it's
now
just,
and now we know why.
Yeah, exactly. It's okay if that's the case. I don't give a toss if that's what we've got. But at least be upfront enough to let us know where we're at. And again, like I said, it said that we are now going to be at a position where we're just about level with the League One budget from last year. And that places us in the second percentile. So it's like, well, that's 7 to 12. Well, we're competitive for me now. We're competitive now to be just outside the playoffs. We're not a top seven budget. We're looking at going up. We're now already going from we're looking to go up to we're looking to stabilise, which is fine, but just say that.
But it's like the whole thing with the chair. Mike Buckley's come in working part-time 2 days a week. We've got no head of football, which was, what, muted three, 6 months ago. That's not happened yet. Is that because the budget is low and we haven't got the money now to bring in a decent full-time head of football? This is why I said earlier, we had, a Twitter space, and I said, is it time now we ask the fans a question of what road do we actually really want to go down in the next, say, 5 years? Do we go down the road where, right, the stadium's debt's got to be paid off, the team, unfortunately, the budget ain't going to be great, our expectations are going to be to stay in League Two, possibly mid-table in League Two, or do we go down the road and look for a buyer to actually buy the club? Some people wanted to sell the team, but not the stadium or the ground, like the stadium, sorry, or the club, but which I don't think you're going to get. And the flip side, I said this on the coin toss of that is, how many millionaires are out there? How many rich people, how many Ryan Reynolds who bought Wrexham are out there going to go, let's go buy AFC Wimbledon? There probably ain't that many at the moment. People are very tight with their money. Even the richest people in the world are trying to pull their strings back a little bit. And who's realistically going to come and buy Wimbledon? But it's a conversation I think we need to have with the fan base is, what road do you want to go in? Because I can only see it opening up, and we've got four tough games coming up. If we don't win a point in them, we could be just above the relegation zone. It then becomes next last season again, deja vu, it's Groundhog Day, and it gets toxic again. People will be calling Tony Jackson's head.
I don't disagree with you at all, mate. And again, like I said, I've made it clear that I'm, and I know we've had people talking about the fan ownership model, and I don't want to bore everyone to death with it. But I think it'd be an interesting conversation that if you said to people now where we're at in League Two, that, you know, we can take further investment or a bigger majority than we're offering and be competitive or stay up in League Two, or we don't, and there's a possibility that we're floating at the bottom end of the table, that we could go into the conference. I'd be interested for fans to be, would they still be like, no, we're going to the conference, or whether I would have thought, and I might be naive, but I would have thought of all of the Don's Trust members, I think they would relinquish a bit more control to stay in the Football League, because I think that is massive. I know they're on BT Sport, the conference, and it's great, but the moment you go from playing, you know, Bradford, then you play Dorking Wanderers, I think it's a real, real worry.
Also, it's a really, really tough league to get out of the conference.
Oh, my God.
One team goes up automatic. The rest of playoff, they do a weird playoff system that goes down to like 8th or 9th, and then you play each other. One who finishes set gets straight into the semi-final. So it's really weird. I don't really like it. Don't really want to go back down there. I like league football. I don't mind League Two. If we stayed in League Two for the rest of my life, I probably wouldn't be overly upset with it. A couple of good cup runs here and there. But as I said, I think we need to be open and honest to our fans of what is to be expected. And as I said, I think a conversation now needs to be had, and not just with Don's Trust members. This is people that are paying their season tickets, people that are spending money in the bar, and go, look, what road, where do you want to see AFC Wimbledon in 10 years' time? Because at the moment, until the debt's paid off, we are going to be living a tighter budget. We're going to have less money to spend on players. You're not going to see, we're going to have to get in the Nathan Young Coombs and build up relationship with Brentford's. And we're going to have to bring youth team players straight in who you're going to fall in love with, but within a season, they're going to be sold to Huddersfield.
I also think, Lee, sorry to cut you, but we're losing 900 grand, right? And they basically said that's down to attendances, potentially, and 500 grand in terms of the central money. I feel like the club need to come out and be like, okay, no, we're going to have to change our plan here. We're not thinking of being in the Championship in 4 years' time now. I mean, it needs to be that molecular where we go, only four teams are going up this year. There are a lot of money. We're already in a position where we're struggling. So that means it's 3 years now. And that will mean we almost need to back to back. And we have not, our budget is going to be between 7 and 12. We'll go up, we'll get that money back, but we're not going to be in the top budget of anything. I just feel like the club need to take a step back and go, do you know what? The more I think about it, I'm like, what a stupid press conference that was. Like,
well, I was just
managers rush up, back him, fine. Don't say we're going to get into the Championship in 5 years. It's like we haven't won since the Normandy. It's like, come on, seriously.
The whole statement is ridiculous. You back a manager a week later, he gets sacked.
I mean, that's got to go up there in some of the worst speeches. I mean, I know Liz Truss has got him, bless her, and best of luck to her, but some of the chats about cheese and stuff, you're like, oh my God, shut up already.
That statement was last year, then.
I know, but it's just like some of the conversations, it's so worrying.
People go, well, you've got to realise what kind of club we are. You, if you don't know that, it's like, well, yeah, but we're being told by the people that are running the club that we're going to be in the Championship in 5 years. Yeah, but they're going to say that. You've got to realise, it's like, yeah, but I do. We're smart people. We know mid-table's fine. But there's people out there will hear
who don't, who take it as lip service, who don't know as much, who just go, right, that's what it is.
They're the ones who are running the club, so to speak. They're the ones that know the information. They know how much money is in our bank. So we must have more money than we expect or we're bringing in. Maybe Mark Robertson. Is it Mark Robertson or the guy who runs Boohoo or the guy that come in? He's probably maybe putting more money in than we know. But what has happened to him? Because I said we can sell 25% still, but no one wants to buy it. And this is why I say about conversation, is there anyone out there who actually wants to buy a club? Freddie Flaxman is now part of the board. What has he done regarding selling us across the board? Because that's what he said when he came in with his manifesto. We don't hear much from the Donors Trust boarders in the people that got voted in this year. I don't know what they've done, what they're doing. I don't pay as much attention to the pro boards and stuff like that. Is it on there? Is what work they're being done and stuff? Are the minutes on there? Because I believe some of the minutes get put back and some of them ain't even come out. So it's like, again, it's just mad. And as I said, we've gone into a season now. Everyone's thinking, right, we're going to get a decent squad together. We're going to push for playoffs, possibly one of the automatic spots. And now we're going to be lucky if we finish 12th.
I mean, let's be honest, right? You know, we're turning this into Armageddon and we're nowhere near that yet because obviously two get relegated and, you know, I'll be absolutely devastated if there isn't two worse teams than us. But it is just that, again, it's one of those things, and football's a cruel mistress, that you get built up and built up and built up and built up. And since we've been at Plough Lane and all the hope and the excitement of going and watch our team at home, we've been poor there. And we've had many times where we're going to Plough Lane and be disappointed. And the thing I'm interested in, and I wonder with this conversation, whether they've had to really rethink. And I was going to ask you, I don't know. Is football going to be a massive, massive victim of this cost of living crisis across the board? Because, again, you're talking about energy and stuff like that. I mean, not being funny, they're talking about watching the BBC earlier. And there's a poor woman in Manchester, I think it is. She ran a CAF and it was like she paid £14,000 energy, electricity. She got a recent billing. It was like £198,000. And I was like, Scott, sorry. Like literally, you're dead on that. So I just wonder whether or not the whole club are like, well, hold on a minute, we don't know where this is going. It could have gone up to, like, you know, the floodlights. It's like, it was £2,000 a game, it's now 25.
I saw something written on one of the forums that the FA are pushing for games to in the winter to be kicking off earlier, because then that way the floodlights don't have to come on and people, like, clubs don't have to use floodlights. And again, on the Twitter space that we did, we were asking, like, what other revenue streams do the club use? Do we have loads of weddings booked? Do we have funeral wakes at the club? But then your point there regarding, is it worth booking a wedding and literally breaking even because it's costing us fortunes in electricity and stuff, and then we're outpricing because...
Well, this is where the conversation is. And like I said, again, it's hard to know because we don't know. I haven't got a clue how much it costs to run a stadium in terms of the energy, but I'm sure it will have an impact, and it will naturally... If it's coming out of the club, then it's going to have an impact on the playing structure. Again, it's just another thing that, and another sort of straw that can break the budgets back, if you like.
Because one of the questions we had is, has anything changed from last season? And I was thinking about this today. I was driving my cab and I was thinking about last season, what's changed? But what's changed in, say, 5 to 10 years, Dan? What's changed since we started? The same people are still doing the same jobs. So, yeah. And this is no... spite against anyone who does these jobs.
I get it.
Fantastic job, but they're doing them since we started. So Mark Jones, he still designs the kits from day one to now. Commentary team, Mikey T and Rob, still doing it from this day. Lawrence Lowne is still the person that looks after all the other media from the away teams and other people. You've still got Trevor that's still involved with Robin at the kit, man. Do you know what I mean? These are still the same people. Everything is the same. No one... And this is why I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that this is no, like, Ivor's still the marketing manager, I believe, do you know what I mean, and stuff like that. This is no spite, they could be doing the best jobs in the world. But
no, I get that.
What kind of KPIs, what kind of accountability do these people have that are doing these jobs at our club? Do you know what I mean? What is it, the fact they can just do what they want? Like, do you know what I mean? And who's going to say something to them? And we keep saying, why does nothing changes? But the same people are still in the same jobs. There's good young people that are helping out with the podcast and stuff like that, get involved, chat. We've had Jamie Sliven, who, you know,
Yeah, Posh
Jamie has come on a few times. Brilliant, brilliant speaker. He does something
Posh,
with
Posh Jamie.
See, nicknames again.
Lazy nickname.
But it's people like him, brilliant. I could speak to him all day about football. He's really engaging. But why are we not looking at getting younger people involved? Why, like at the club, when I couldn't go to a game recently, it was a home game. And the commentary team, Mikey T was doing the announcing of the first team at the same time, and Rob was doing the commentary. So it was only Rob speaking. Why not get a 17, 18-year-old kid who really wants to be a commentator? Like, ask people to do it. Do you know what I mean? Put out saying, look, we're looking for a young commentary to come in.
Yeah, I don't see
why. Train them because they can't be doing the job forever. Train them up and then go, right, now we've got three people involved. Don't have to pay them. They could be volunteers. And as I said, it's the same.
I do get what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that's a better conversation. But what I would say is that obviously over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, pandemic, we've had lots of that got into a brand new stadium. Obviously, there are things that have changed and people have done certain things, but I don't think it's a huge crisis to be able to potentially open up and give another opportunity. I mean, I'm not being funny. Maybe, you know, it could be one of the podcasts go, right, you know what, we're gonna open it up and we're gonna give you access and we're gonna give you the chance to do it. Maybe do an alternative commentary. You haven't got to do it. You can go, you can listen to them, or you can listen to it, like almost like they used to do with Sky when you're in the room. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I don't think it has an impact. But again, I don't know. It's really, really hard. I presume they're just thinking about things that are so bigger. They're bigger than what we know about. But I don't have a huge issue with the kits or the commentary as such, as long as they are the best people that we've got and we can do it. And it's hard to know that. And again, you talk about availability. It could be cost related. I mean, we don't know, do we?
I was just thinking about, because you know, you said what has changed from last year. We learned any lessons. And then I was thinking, like, since we started AFC Wimbledon, who was involved with the club then? They're still involved with the club now, which is great. Great stuff.
Yeah.
But are they the best people for the job? Is it offering jobs to the boys, or are we actually looking and thinking these are the best people for this job? Or is there someone out there that could do a better job than this? Do you know what I mean? And I take, and people were scared of giving up a little bit of power, that some people like, not giving up power, but people like Chris Fault, people like Matt Haylock that we've spoke to on here, they do it for the love of the club. You know what I mean? They ain't earning fortunes. They're probably not earning great wages, but they're learning enough to keep them going, keep watching Wimbledon games, and they do a really, really good job.
Well, I'll message Mikey and Rob, and I'll just go, look, I'm interested. Can I come to an away game? I'll pick them up, I'll drop them off, and can I just be part of the commentary team for a game as a guest and see what they say? They could chuck it out.
Because commentary I don't really listen to, because we go to the games live and it's for a different audience to us. But it weren't, again, this is not a start at anyone. It's just got me thinking that who is involved with the commentary, who's involved with marketing. It's the same people that were doing it as AFC Wimbledon when we were playing Sandhurst that is doing it now. And it's like, how do we get young people engaged? How do we get the best people for the job with the qualifications to do that job? And yeah, I just don't see it.
Well, like I said, it'll be interesting. Like I said, it's that delicate balance we speak about Wimbledon between amateurism and professionalism. We want to be amateurish enough where we can get close to players, have a chat, then come to birthday parties, and you can speak to them on a first name basis. They come into the crowd, they have a beer, and they can talk about the game. But then we want to be professional enough, like a championship, where it's a difficult pendulum. If you want to be super professional, then you don't get to talk to your players every week. If you want to be amateur, you can have them really, really close and engaging, but you don't get the full product. I think it's just, where do you sit on that kind of tricky seesaw? But like I said, I really hope that we find a solution to the budgets and stuff, or more importantly, the comms is better. I just want the comms to be better, where they just don't build everything up. All of a sudden we come crashing down as a club, as a team, as a management group, and above all as supporters, because if the supporters get to the point where they're getting lied to and they're getting frustrated, then we're in a world of trouble.
No, I agree. And as I said, it's got to be the best professional people. And this is why I'm saying we need to have that question with fans. What road do you want to go in? Do you want to go keep with the volunteer route of people that is, say, jobs for the boys, jobs for the girls? Do you know what I mean? Or do we go more professional route and we get more professional paid people in to do jobs that then increases our revenue stream. And that's got to be a good thing for then the budgets going forward. But
totally agree, mate. Totally agree. And who knows, I could become the new Motti. I might come on here, be the new John Motson.
Yeah, good one, mate. Good one. Right. When we come back, what are we talking about next? I've totally forgot.
We're going to talk a little bit about the Leyton Orient game.
Yeah, we'll discuss the Orient game. And
then we're going to talk very briefly about a few of the players and what we think about a window and are we sure and et cetera, et cetera.
Cool. When we come back, that's what we're doing.
The Wombles Had a Dream podcast. By the fans, for the fans.
Okay, so we're going to be discussing our transfer window and then we'll move on with a brief preview of the Leyton Orient game. So, Danny, we've kind of gone over it a little bit. You weren't happy with the window closing or was you happy about business?
And again, it's a little bit of a carry on from the last game, but now we know what we've got and the money that we had and all this bits and bobs, I'm not sure it's an overly bad window. I'm not saying it's brilliant because, you know, we got experienced players that we missed last year. We spent a bit of money on some good players. It looks like we've recruited better loans. So from that angle, I'm pretty chuffed. But now I know that we have been struggling for a bit more money, selling Radoni, keeping a Sal, which was probably as big a deal as possible. I think it sheds a different light. I think at the back, I think Pierce is a calming influence, but I don't feel we quite play the style of football that suits him at the moment. I think he's a bit of a war horse, a bit of a warrior. I think Gunter has been very vanilla, to be honest. He's been okay. I wouldn't go a huge amount more than that. Magoma has shown passages of brilliance and passages of obviously real naivety. And you feel like on a good day, he looks like a Rolls Royce. And on a bad day, he looks like a Mini, to be honest with you. He looks like a clapped out Ford Escort. I think up top, I think we've Coombs and Davison look promising. Coombs in particular looks very, very strong. Davison, I think, is a little bit, I think he's going to have to be a work in process. And I'm hoping that he'll get there. Huddling, bloody hell, I ain't got a clue. I don't know what to make of him. When I've watched him play, I've been sort of okay, nothing special, but we'll see. The new young centre-back, I think we needed some strength in there. And if he's half-decent, I think that might be quite useful if we want to change formation. The biggest intriguing buy was Harry Pell for me. So, having Harry Pell coming back from Accrington, not knowing how much it is as well, is an interesting conversation. I'd be very, very curious how much he's actually worth. But at the same time, in a position where we've kind of needed a little bit more steel, it'll be fascinating to see, does he play in that holding role as a two, or is he actually going to play as an attacking midfielder going forward? I think he's got goals in him, but whether or not he's in a position where he's going to add the threat, I guess it's a question of, is he a backup to Marsh, Magoma, Woodyard, or is he a genuine replacement for McCormick? That will be, in my opinion, where his signing kind of goes. So overall, I think it's been a good window. I do think we're short, but then again, at the same time, you could ask anybody in the country, are they happy with their team's windows? And they'll tell you, no, I wanted a few more. But anyway, what do you think? Have you anything in particular?
Good cover there, Dan. Sorry, my little boy came out and I had to mute my thing because he's kicking off. My missus is at work still, so he's kicking off because the pad's gone off, but it is bedtime. But anyway, yeah, with the guys at the window, I thought, to be fair, I look at last year's squad and this year's squad, I think this year's better. When our players come in, Pierce, I thought, yeah, he's going to be good. We just need to get a system that suits him. I don't think it's suiting him at the moment. Magoma, I think, will be brilliant. Again, I agree with you. He's quite naive in places and in points. NYC is brilliant. I think Davison being our striker, permanent striker, is great news for us because he'll only get better. He's only, what, 22, 23? So he's only going to get better.
I don't think he's particularly old.
So he'll get better with time. And I think, yeah, we just need some of our older players to come back. Huddling and Woodyard to come back in.
Woodland.
To make us stronger. But it's last year's squad that is letting us down at the moment. The Lee Browns, the Zanevs, do you know what I mean? People like them are making the mistakes. Marsh hasn't set the world alight at the moment. Like
no, I agree with that.
Which is shame. And it shows why Heitken was so good next to him.
But, can I ask you, Lee, where do you see Pell? We spoke a little bit about Pell. Do you see him as one of the two, if we're playing this 5-3-2? Do you see him as a potential McCormick replacement in that 10 role, or provide him with a Sow and possibly Chislett? Or if we change formation, does he get into like a 4-4-2 or anything like that? What do you think?
I don't know with Pell, because I weren't overly impressed with him against Stockport.
No, I was. I mean, he had a couple of chances, to be fair. So he had a header and a few bits.
He's got to get fit. That's one of the things. Yeah. He's got to get fit. He's got to be playing games. And once he gets fit and play games, yeah, it'd be much better. But I don't know. We were talking about this on the thing, and I'd like to ask you a question, actually. It's going a bit off subject. We asked this on the Sunday debrief last week and asked people to send in their formations they would play. What formation would you go with? Because people, you've said it tonight, 3-5-2 doesn't suit our players. It's not our system, don't suit. What formation would you change it to, and what one would you hope Johnny Jackson changes it to?
Great question. I think the challenge is, I think we've got some decent centre-backs. I think Callum Bye is okay. The worry I've got is I feel like Callum Bye and Nightingale are not ball-playing centre-backs. I think they kind of want to, like, they're more physical, as is Pierce. So in my opinion, it lends you to four at the back. I think it lends you a four at the back. Whether you lose the industry of Curry as a left back rather than left wing back, I don't know. And maybe he's picking it. So for me, I think you have to play four at the back. Personally, I like a Sal wide. I don't like a Sal in the middle. So that would lend me to play three up top or one with two wide. Whether that is going to be Chislett and a Sal with Davison or Young Coombs at the top, or whether you play Davison at the top, Young Coombs just behind, Chislett on the right, a Sal on the left. And then that means you've got two of your midfielders, which is two of Pell, Woodyard, Magoma, Marsh, almost like a 4-2-3-1. As I said, whether that works for us, I don't know, but I feel that is slightly better. I've never liked 4-1 where you've got one holder. I'm not huge on that. So I think if it was me, I'd be looking at 4-2-3-1 rather than 5-3-2, with the idea being is that almost you're playing as a back six and a front four, where you're going, you guys just go and get on with it and have a great time and be aggressive. You six, your job, you know, is to hold fire and make sure nothing gets through. And the idea is that one of those top three can come back. I also, by the way, feel like it's not necessarily just a formation. On corners, leave a man up. Let's not defend with 11 in the pitch. We've got to kind of push our... We need to play on the front foot. And at the moment, I don't feel like we're doing that.
So I don't mind that too much. I went 4-1-3-2. So I went Curry...
4-1-3-2.
Yeah, I went Curry... Pierce, Nightingale, apparently there's rumours going on Twitter that he's injured. So he's out now.
Well, so he's got no... He's... Oh, right, okay. Well,
so if Nightingale's injured...
Yeah. I love him to pieces, but the reality of it, I feel, is that he's kind of... I think he's kind of looked around the market and he's realised this is where he is.
I think Gunter, for me, is... I know people have not been blown away with him, but he's not a wing-back. He ain't got the pace. He never has.
I agree.
The last couple of years. So I'd have him as my right-back. I think he'd be solid right-back. He'd move us up the pitch. Then I'd have Paris Magoma in front of the four. And then if Woodyard came back in, I'd probably have Woodyard in front of the four and then push Paris up. But then my three would be then Asau, Pell, Chiz, and then Davison, Young Coombs up front.
So you're playing 4-1...
3-2.
3-2.
Because the Sal can get up and down, so can Chiz. Do you know what I mean? They're quite industrious. Do you know what I mean? They're not, you know, people are saying no width and stuff with regards to that formation, but we can then, you know what I mean? Them
two, you get your width from the three, don't you?
Yeah.
The three go.
That's what I mean. You get your Chislett and your Sal go. You've got Pell then that can move the ball around. Him and Paris can link up. Yeah, that's what I'd go with. But yeah.
It's interesting because obviously last year the problem was we were talking about we're going to play 3-5-2 or whatever formation we ended up playing. And it was a case of the conversation from Robert, are we going to be flexible? We can play this, that and the other. We never did. We just played the same formation every. It's like Mike Bassett, 4-4-2. But it'd be interesting to see whether Johnny Jackson, and again, it's an interesting one because people, managers either come in and they go, this is the formation I play. I'm going to buy people to fit that formation. Or people come in and go, these are the players I've got. What's the best formation to work with? And it's always a delicate balance. But I kind of feel like Jackson at the moment has picked a formation, picked good players who don't quite fit into the formation that he wants to play. Rather than last year, I just didn't think we had particularly good players. So it'll be, I don't know. I personally feel like four at the back would suit us better. But ultimately, I feel like we need to be on the front foot more and be a bit braver in terms of, at the moment, we're too Sammy Moore-like, get the ball, go horizontal, get the ball, horizontal.
I think Johnny Jackson's downfall with us, if he doesn't change, is his stubbornness. And this is what's cost two managers previous to him.
Yeah.
Is that if he doesn't change the formation or try something different, maybe away from home to or at home, do you know what I mean? And we've got a really tough run of fixtures coming up now.
With, yeah.
Orient Saturday, Northampton Tuesday, and then we go to Carlisle and Bradford. Do you know what I mean? They're not going to be easy games. And Orient are on flying form.
I was going to say, let's talk about them. They look really decent. So
they sit top of the league. They're flying. They're scoring goals for fun. And I really do think that they could score a few against us on Saturday. I just hope that we don't go in the 3-5-2, which ends up being a 5 at the back.
Is Curry fit?
I don't know. I hope so.
I feel Curry can do a left wing back. I don't think Osu's. Again, I felt for Osu because he played on Saturday. He can't be fit because he looked absolutely horrendous.
How bad is he?
He's been bought as a potential backup. I don't see him as a regular starter, but he looked well unfit.
See, I've been very surprised by him because I didn't think they'd be up there. I thought they'd be like us, mid-table kind of team. I don't think they've spent money. I don't know really much about it. Did they get a show? They got the bust of one midfield. What's his name? He used to play for us. George Moncur.
And they've got Darren Prattley as well.
George Moncur is just absolutely pulling strings for them at the moment. It'd be a good atmosphere because we're close to sell out. I believe they'll probably sell out their away end. I haven't got a season ticket this year, so I bought my ticket. I've paid £25 to come and watch Wimbledon versus Orient, which I think is a lot of money. I know people say we've got to stay long, but I just think 20 is plenty. And I know, it's, you know what I mean, for our level, League Two, get more people. I know we're selling out anyway, so that's probably what the argument will be. But one of my mates...
If you think the Premier League, doesn't the Premier League have a rule where you can't spend more than away, 30 quid? No, but what I'm saying is, in a Premier League match, away from home, they can only charge a certain amount of money. What I mean is that watching Wimbledon at home in your normal seat, which is, you know, at a modest state, it's a nice stadium for us. Or you could go and watch go to Old Trafford or Chelsea or Tottenham and pay 30, I think it's 30 quid, and you can watch for £5 more, watch a Premier League game with some of the best people on the planet. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Well, one of my mates, he went to, what was the last home game? I didn't go to it. What was the last home game we had? Oh, we lost 1-0, weren't it?
Yeah, Barrow.
It was really bad, yeah, Barrow, and he hasn't been this season, and he said it was really poor. He said he called what we were going to do against Stockport, but he turned up on the day, and he paid, they said they only had a ticket left in the West Stand, and his price was £34 turning up on the day to watch Wimbledon play Barrow, which I think is disgusting. I think that's too much.
Well, and again, it's too much at the best of times. Add into it, and again, this is where we as a club and where everything... Does football have an obligation at a time where the country is going through a recession, at a time where inflation is at a record, at a time where crisis and stuff? Does football need to go, okay, we need to support our fans here? Is this a point where we need to start asking the Premier League and its players to put their hands in their pockets and go, okay, I've earned millions and millions and millions of pounds. I'm going to make it easier for the fans to come and enjoy the football, because you know, it's going to be a very, very bleak winter. It's going to be cold. It's going to be horrible. Does football have an obligation to support its fans? Bearing in mind the reality of football, it used to be a working class game with working class people watching it. It's not now, obviously. But whether we have an obligation to be like, okay, we understand we've got a stadium to pay for, but we also understand the fact that there, a lot of our fans have got very, very challenging times ahead, and therefore we're going to make it easier to go.
Dan, we're talking about cost of living, and we're talking about people making money, and we're saying about Wimbledon, £20 too much, 34. The food, I think Plough Lane's really nice, but I do find it quite expensive to say paid £10 for a pint of chips and stuff like that. But it is decent quality, it is good quality, but people are struggling with money at the moment. But you've got the Premier League spending £2 billion. But anyway, we've gone right off subject there with regards to Orient the weekend. So,
but anyway, so going back to Orient then, are we going to get anything out of the game?
No.
Okay, that was honest. I think
the best thing we could hope for is a draw. I think, unfortunately, Orient are just going to be... One thing I've picked up in this league is if you've got a bit of pace, then you'll frighten teams. And I think Orient have got pace. I just can't see us getting in. They're flying for the reason. I just hope... It's hard because I always feel like we could do something with this team, the first team. I think they're a good side. I don't know. I'd go 3-1 Orient.
3-1 Orient. I feel like we're not in a great place, but I guess I'd like to see us be a bit more brave in possession. We're playing the top of the league. They're doing well. We're struggling. Can we be a bit more on the front foot? We're at home on a busy thing. Can we sort of set the agenda as opposed to this team? Whether we're going to be able to be doing that with Brave, I'd pick Magoma, definitely. I'd pick Pell, definitely. I'd pick Asau, definitely. I'd pick Davison and Young Coombs up top. And I would go, okay, we're going to go big here. We're going to really, really... Yep.
Yeah.
I'm playing four at the... In a perfect world, I'm playing four at the back. I'm playing Gunter. I'm playing Curry. I'm playing Pierce plus one. And I don't care who it is out of Callum Bailey, Nightingale, or Towler, but I'm definitely not picking Lee Brown. He can have a breather. I'm picking Magoma, and I'm telling him to be brave and to look to be positive with Pell. Pell goes forward, Magoma can sit, and then I'm playing Asau on one side. I'm playing Young Coombs just off of Davison, and I'm playing potentially Chislett on the right.
No,
and I'm saying, look, let's go and be
prediction.
Aggressive.
What's your prediction?
I'm going to say we're going to score, and I think it's going to be a narrow loss, maybe 2-1, maybe 3-2, maybe, yeah. I'm not as negative. I think it's one of them leagues that I think if you have a really good game, it's not sometimes where some leagues like last year, we could have played really well. We're never going to beat Sheffield Wednesday there, or we're not going to beat this team at this point. You've got to be really, really, really good. And they be crap. I feel like if we're very, very good, we've got a really, really good chance of getting points. But Leighton Orient are top, yeah.
Sam Elliott made a great point on the Sunday debrief last week. He said that the problem with Wimbledon at the moment is it's got so predictable.
Yeah.
You can predict the Stockport game. You probably can predict what's going to happen on Saturday against Orient. The whole thing is just so, everything's predictable. It's just meh. And I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm saying to you, I think something special is going to happen this year and we're going to be flying. And then obviously you look at the transfer window and the stuff that we spoke about again, and it just knocks the wind out of you and it's just tough. But yeah, are you going, Dan, to the game?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I'm going to be there. It'd be nice to get back. Obviously, I had to miss the last home game. So it'd be lovely to get back in and get involved. And I'm going to Tuesday to Northampton. So I'm looking forward to the next... I do really enjoy going to the football. I'm not going to lie. It's absolutely wicked. So yeah. I'm hoping. It's just so frustrating. Like you said, I actually quite like a lot of what Sam says, to be fair. I think he talks a lot of sense. And it's just frustrating because Plough Lane had such a massive energy, didn't it? And everyone's so excited to go there. And we've just been, as fans, it's just not been the... It's almost like a Plough Lane voodoo, isn't it? We kind of feel like we haven't had...
The club don't help with that either. This could go on for hours, but I've got a situation where was it? Not about the previous game before at Doncaster, 5 minutes before the game kicking off, the stewards coming up and asking us to sit down before the game's even started, asking us to sit down. It's like, what do you want from us? We're fans. We're trying to get an atmosphere going to get behind the team. Do you want us just to sit, have prawn sandwiches and go home? That ain't going to happen at football. But
I hate prawns.
I'm going, but yeah, I'm driving down because I'm working. I've got to pick a customer up from Gatwick straight after the game on Saturday. So,
okay, that'll work out for you.
It'll
be lovely just to be able to be in a position. Like I said, I don't think anyone expects us to be win every home game. I think they're a bit naive, but let's be positive. We're at home. Let's go and take it to this top of the league and go, okay, where are we at in relation to top of the league? Let's be aggressive. Let's get get the ball. Let's not look to get the ball. Go sideways, go sideways. If you're in the team because you can use the ball, be brave. Let's not go, Will Nightingale, pick a pass. No thanks.
Move it
Will,
quicker.
You can stop them. Be physical. Be quicker. Be aggressive. Be brave. Make a mistake in the attacking third. We'll deal with it.
No, I agree.
But let's be brave.
Right. Well, I might see you Saturday because you still owe me food. So,
all right,
I know we've got double or nothing, we this year.
Absolutely, mate.
What's that on? Nathan Young?
You had Davison, didn't you? Loads of, you had a number of goals that Davison was going to score, and I laughed it off.
Ten.
And I laughed at you. And then he got two at Mansfield, and I was like, oh, God.
He's got eight already, isn't he?
Yeah. In training, he has, yeah.
All right, Danny, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And we'll be back on Sunday with the Sunday debrief, talking all things Wimbledon that happened during the week and the game against Leyton Orient. Come and join us. Get involved. It only works when people have an opinion and they mention it and say it. And in next week's podcast, we are speaking to, or hopefully speaking to, Ed Aziz. Adebola. Is it Adebola Aziz? Or is it
Adebayo Aziz?
Adebayo Aziz. So we'll be speaking to Aziz regarding his time. And we can sing Aziz is on fire.
Go on, you dons.
Cheers, Dan.
Bye, mate.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Wombles Had a Dream podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Wombles Dream and on Facebook at the Wombles Had a Dream. Get involved. By the fans, for the fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.